Case 5, 103747, Smiley versus Columbia College of Chicago. I often wonder how much mail Columbia College gets that really should be going to Columbia University and and vice versa. Okay, so.
Good morning,
Your Honors. Morning.
Kevin Vodak on behalf of the appellant, Saria Smiley. May it please the court. This is an appeal from a grant of summary judgment to Columbia. The issue for de novo review is whether a jury could reasonably find that Columbia discharged Ms. Smiley from her employment as an instructor because of her Arab race and Palestinian national origin when construing all of the evidence and reasonable inferences in a light most favorable to her. We submit that the record presents numerous issues of fact from which a jury could find that Ms. Smiley was targeted because of her Arab and Palestinian background using the indirect method of proof in McDonnell Douglas versus Green.
Now, Ms. Smiley has admitted to goofing around with her students and teasing them about their opinions. Why wouldn't that be enough to show that she wasn't meeting the college's legitimate expectations for its instructors?
Because we have to look at the context of what goofing around admission really was, and that was joking about students' musical preferences, having nothing to do with their backgrounds at all. And second, the only issue of notice given to Ms. Smiley about a performance deficiency was at her termination that stated, you violated the anti-discrimination policy. There was no professional standard policy or any other ambiguous policy that addressed these types of jests with students. And honestly, you know, I would hazard to guess that most of the instructors at Columbia would engage with some sort of banter to keep the students engaged, and that's exactly what Ms. Smiley did.
I'm going to ask you something. Am I correct that, in your view, that the school did not fire her because she allegedly persecuted a Jewish student, but rather that she told her class that she was an Arab and announced that she had once eaten a knish over the weekend? Were those the actual reasons given by the school, those two?
No, Judge. In fact, there were no real reasons given to Ms. Smiley at the time of her discharge. If you look at the letter that she received from Louise Love, all it states is you violated the policy without any explanation. And if you look at the investigator Down's notes, in fact, there is no discussion of a knish or Ms. Smiley admitting that she talked about her background in class. Those were formulated after the fact by Louise Love and not raised actually until summary judgment. She didn't even raise that in her deposition testimony when I specifically questioned her. What was the basis for your finding? Her basis was basically this lack of professionalism where she's jesting with students. There was no mention of a targeting of the student A based on his race or religion. And in fact, we have a very hot dispute of the facts in this case. It's not just Ms. Smiley. It's all these other students that have come forward on her behalf who said, look, there was no discriminatory treatment. And in fact, there was no comment on the first day of class about the size of student A's nose, a ludicrous allegation. What happened was that student A became upset at the last day of class. There's no dispute about that. But to hold Ms. Smiley accountable for that student's being upset over a critique during a final exam is ridiculous.
So, in other words, what you're arguing is that there were never any allegedly anti-Semitic remarks made during class.
That's correct, Judge. And in fact, I mean, if you look at Ms. Smiley's performance history, she was there for nearly 15 years without incident. And the fact that the college never interviewed any of these other students, I think, is highly problematic in this case. And it goes to the issue of disparate treatment, where Investigator Downs In all of her other investigations, she had objective evidence against those instructors, either through another witness or through a written statement. Those were the findings that she made. And, you know, I encourage this court to look at Ms. Downs' deposition testimony. It is replete with lack of recollection about any of her investigations. That means that Columbia cannot explain the difference in treatment between the cursory investigation of Ms. Smiley's allegations against her versus the other instructors. It means that she gave the benefit of the doubt to other instructors, and that was not an inference she gave to Ms. Smiley. And then when the decision went up to Louise Love, you have to look at the issues of credibility that a jury has to decide here. Because Ms. Love was aware that Downs' investigation was deficient. First of all, Ms. Smiley, at the beginning of the meeting, said, "I don't even know what I'm charged with. I don't know what the allegations are."
Are there any written standards for how an investigation is to be conducted?
Well, the standards by the Dean of Students, Wilson Taylor, said that if either the offender or the complainant comes forth with witnesses, then you have to interview those witnesses. The district court erred by saying, well, they could interview those witnesses. No, she said, we would interview those witnesses. Ms. Downs never did that. Also, there were standards in the procedure. Wilson Taylor testified that you have to advise the offender of the complainant, the nature of the complaint, and the specific allegations. According to Ms. Smiley, none of that was done. So, therefore, Columbia violated those standards in the investigation. And again, when Ms. Love reviewed the investigation itself and talked to Ms. Smiley, she was aware that none of those procedures were followed. She was aware that none of the other students were interviewed. And suspiciously, when Ms. Smiley questioned, why didn't you interview all the other students, Ms. Love states, we needed your permission to do so. There's no standard or policy by Columbia that you need the faculty's permission to interview the students. And in fact, they had a teaching assistant who, you know, really had no bearing. He was not going to be subjected to, criticism by Ms. Smiley if he talked against her. You know, so what? He could find another faculty advisor.
Didn't she admit that she embarrassed the student, causing him to run out of the class? She admitted that, right?
No, she admitted that the student was upset. She did not admit that she caused that upset. She speculated on, I had this joke, you know, that I said, I'm an old woman because he doesn't know who Peter Gabriel is. And that led to the student running out of the room. So a jury has to decide, whether that comment in itself was sufficient for the Columbia to rely on that mere allegation to say that, yes, Ms. Smiley was anti-Semitic.
Are you contending that she never said, that's a Jewish name, isn't it, or something to that effect?
Yes, she denies that, and all of the students who saw sworn declarations said they either didn't remember that or didn't hear it. All of these students said, look, he was treated just as fairly as all of us. So in looking at all of these facts in Ms. Smiley's favor, we request that this court reverse summary judgment for Columbia and remand for trial. Thank you.
Okay, so now we have Mr. Rosenberg. Hello.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jeffrey Rosenberg on behalf of the appellee, Columbia College, Chicago. Your Honor, I'll address some of the issues that were raised by the bench, starting with the investigation, just to clarify a few of the facts. The investigation was done solely by Ms. Downs. Ms. Love had no cooperation or involvement in the investigation. First, it went to Ms. Downs. Ms. Downs received a statement from a student with egregious allegations. We can't lose sight of that. There is no Ms. Downs interviewed the student. Other faculty members interviewed that student. I mean, these allegations were above and beyond what any employer, much less what a college, an educational institution, should be entitled to expect out of their employees.
But you pointed out in your brief that Columbia College had no requirement that the investigation of a student complaint include interviews of witnesses. But if, in fact, the investigation of the student's complaints of instructor number two did include interviews, doesn't that mean that instructor number two was treated more favorably than Ms. Smiley?
Not necessarily.
Regardless of what the school's policy on such interviews might have been.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, for two reasons. First of all, let's look at all the interviews that Ms. Downs partook of during the relevant period. Including the instant case, there were six investigations that Ms. Downs took place with. First, out of those six were witnesses interviewed. And even out of those two, it doesn't equate with this case. In one of those two, they were former students. In the other one, the only one where there were possibly some witnesses. First of all, it was just one out of six cases. And those, all we know about those witnesses is that Ms. Downs wrote that they were involved in the matter. So we don't know whether they were potential. They could easily have been potential.
But we know they were interviewed. That's my point. We know they were interviewed. And here, no one was interviewed.
Correct, Your Honor. So in one out of six instances, Ms. Downs interviewed students who were involved in the matter. There's no allegation that other students in the plaintiff's class were subjected to racial discrimination or harassment. In that one instance, there were merely two.
You know, was she fired for telling her class she was Arab and had eaten a knish at a Jewish deli?
Your Honor, there was a two-step process. First, Ms. Downs investigated the incident, and she found, in light of all the evidence, which included the letter from the student, the multiple interviews with the student, the interview with with plaintiff herself, wherein plaintiff made some significant admissions to Ms. Downs. Of course, she's going to deny the main allegations, but she made significant allegations, as the court pointed out, about embarrassing the student. The student ran out of her classroom. The student was very, very upset. All these allegations led Ms. Downs to conclude.
She ran out when something was said about some rock group.
Well,
some singer, I don't know.
That was there were multiple allegations of what plaintiff was saying to this student during class. There were allegations regarding race. There were allegations simply regarding that she was embarrassing him. Why was she doing that? I don't know. But Ms. Downs concluded that the policy was violated. The next step to the process was going to Ms. Love. It wasn't Ms. Love's job to determine if the policy was violated. Ms. Downs had already made that determination. It was solely Ms. Love's job to determine what the repercussions were going to be as a result of the finding of a violation. And again, Ms. Love received this information directly from plaintiff's mouth that I have embarrassed my students. I do goof around with them. I do tease them. I mean, all these things on top of the student's written complaint, the findings of Ms. Downs, that's what led to the finding by Ms. Love, Your Honor.
But, you know, you seem to acknowledge that you hadn't received any complaints about her before this incident and didn't have any issues with her performance. Why isn't that enough to show that she was meeting the school's legitimate expectations?
Your Honor, I touched upon that in my brief. The only way you can just take the prior employment is if you show, if there's an instance, as there is here, of significant negative behavior, is if the defendant is lying about its expectations, which clearly the defendant is not lying that it doesn't want its students harassed on basis of discrimination or other situations, or if several different employees have committed the same offense and yet have had different discipline against them. Neither of those situations apply here. So we can look at the actual conduct at issue, which is pretty egregious. If you look at Student A's complaint, I mean, if one of those allegations are true, we have some serious racial discrimination going on here. Now, Your Honor, moving on to the similarly situated. I don't believe that there's any way that you can say that Ms. Downs' investigation of the plaintiff was significantly different than the other investigations that were presented by the plaintiff. Now, was it different? Yes. Were all five, including the plaintiff, six? Were all six somewhat different? Certainly. Start with her investigation summary, however, Your Honor. If you look at those investigation summaries, same format, almost the same phraseology, there's no differences whatsoever. And as I mentioned before, only in one out of six was a current student interviewed. Only in three out of the six, Ms. Downs found a violation of the policy. And in fact, in three out of the six, half of the instances, the teachers were terminated. Now, that leads to, and that's a little bit of a different issue, because we have Ms. Downs and we have Ms. Love. A problem with the plaintiff's case all along has been, who's the discriminator here? Who is the person who's doing the discriminating? They even threw in Ms. Calabrese, a dean. There's no evidence of anybody doing any discriminating, having any discriminatory intent or motive in this case. Ms. Downs, it's undisputed, never said anything about Arabs, about Palestinians, about anything. In fact, the plaintiff testified how nice Ms. Downs was during their interview, how nice she was, how comfortable she made her. Now, so therefore, Ms. Downs is the one, they say, that plaintiff claims had a different interview to witness. But, Your Honor, there's no discriminatory intent, motive. That is a required element of pretext. Now, let's turn to Ms. Love. Ms. Love, plaintiff claims, had this situation at Roosevelt University. Now, we talk about this in our brief at length. There is no way that that memorandum is admissible. The defendant objected in its reply brief in the summary judgment that allegation, it wasn't authenticated because it was not attached. Plaintiff admits they did not attach this memorandum. It's clearly not relevant. It doesn't show Ms. Love ever saying anything to a Palestinian, anything about a Palestinian, or having any conduct towards a Palestinian. But let's presume even that there is something about Ms. Love showing discriminatory intent. Well, Ms. Love treated the plaintiff exactly like she treated every single other teacher that came her way. In the relevant period, Ms. Love looked at five different violations of the policy. In all five instances, Ms. Love recommended and effected termination of that teacher. There is simply no differentiation in her conduct.
But the school, let me be absolutely certain I'm correct, never asked any student witnesses what they had seen of Smiley or student A's public confrontations.
Your Honor, Ms. Taylor, the Dean of Students, explicitly testified that there is no procedure and there is no written procedure for an investigator to interview witnesses. And in fact, in the testimony of Ms. Calabrese and Ms. Love, she noted it's very problematic to interview current students. That certainly raises issues of confidentiality, of creating alarm. That is not something that is commonly done. And again, if you look at Ms. Downs' investigations, only in one out of six instances did she interview a current student. In that instance, that might have been somebody involved. So, Your Honor, unless there are further questions, I will conclude my argument and ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenberg.
Thank you.
Mr. Bodak has 2 minutes.
Just briefly, Your Honors. In response to counsel's argument that you have to look at this as a two-step process, I think, first of all, that's you viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Columbia, not to the plaintiff. Because Love specifically reviewed Downs' investigation and was aware of the failure to interview the students, and specifically Ms. Smiley countered the notes from Downs' investigation and said, no, I never said that. This is what really happened. And, you know, in fact, Ms. Love was aware that there were numerous credibility issues going on here. She was also aware that the student, you know, only made this complaint, which included complaints from the beginning of the class, after he was critiqued during the final exam. Also, she was aware that one of these allegations was sexual harassment, and she, according to the union representative, just dismissed that allegation. And it's interesting that in their brief, defendant wants to distinguish between sexual harassment complaints and a race-based or religious-based complaint, because one of the allegations was sexual harassment. So there is a comparison here. Also, they're alleging that that Ms. Smiley overstepped her boundaries with the students. That's exactly what you do in a sexual harassment situation. So those are comparable. Also, when counsel indicates that we don't have any evidence of discriminatory intent, this court in Fallar noted that using the pretext analysis, you don't necessarily have to have discriminatory comments. As long as you meet the prima facie elements and pretext, you're there. So, therefore, summary judgment should have been denied. Oh, with respect to the deans of students' office not having a specific policy in place with respect to interviewing witnesses, she testified that there was a practice in that office to do so. We, again, request that the summary judgment be overturned.
A practice, not a policy.
I'm sorry?
A practice, not a policy.
That's correct.
Okay, that's
thank you both so very much. The case will be